so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we're here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Really glad you tuned in, and a very happy Thursday. Well, if you listen often enough, you know we have a special edition every month called Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. We are on our second hour now. We spent the whole first hour talking about detox, the process of the body to rid from toxins, and we talked extensively about what happens when an alcoholic detoxes, what happens when a sugarholic detoxes, what happens when we get on certain medicines and we detox. The phone lines are open now. We'll talk about what you want to talk about. We've got some great email questions as well, but I'll get you that number, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. You can call anonymously if you'd like. And if you're too shy to get on the air, just tell Aaron your question and he'll get it to us. But this is a great question, Dr. Troy, from my friend Andrew. And he says, I'm so glad you told me about Dr. Troy. It's great listening today. One thing that comes to mind is a question regarding detox, which may be relevant to the millennials listening in, is this. Does or can a detox from social media / video games manifest in the body similar to a detox from sugar or alcohol? If so, what are Dr. Troy's recommendations for those who recognize a social media addiction? And he wasn't sure if that was relevant to the conversation, and you said, absolutely, yes, it is. And so let's hear what you have to say.
Yeah, I actually treat this weekly. This is a very important topic, and it's our kids, so it's very, very important. And the funny thing is, it's almost the same in the brain, but there's an artificial stimulant to it. So I'm going to call it the same as, not sugar addiction, but aspartame addiction. So what the problem with aspartame is your brain thinks you're getting sugar, but you're really not. So that's going to cause a problem in the body. When it comes to gaming or some type of social media addiction, what has to happen to make it an addiction is that there's this chemical that gets released. We end up getting some sense of pleasure from the gaming itself or social media, and our brain just kind of starts dripping this chemical called dopamine on these cells, and we start to feel pleasure. And so it activates a pleasure center of our brain in the beginning. And then what happens, just like overconsuming sugar and you become resistant to it, or the crying wolf syndrome with the alcohol, the same thing happens, where what used to give 20 minutes of video gaming or of social media used to give you that pleasure. Now you got to do 30 minutes or 50 minutes or 60 minutes. It's the same chemical process. And so dopamine itself does a lot of different things. And it's important with our muscle tone and function. When we stop doing it and dopamine decreases, then all of a sudden we see a problem with impulse control. We see a problem with pleasure again, so we start to feel more down, more depressed, not just mentally, but physically. So we see a huge lack of motivation. And this is the biggest challenge we have with a lot of the kids coming in. They don't have a motivation to go do anything. And so most of these kids are coming in, and when I say kids, I mean, I'm talking about most of them are in their mid-20s at this point.
Wow.
And they're living at home with their parents, and their parents are saying, I love my child, but come on, we've got to have something more than them living in their room or in the basement gaming. And now they've lost their job and they don't even want to go get another job. And so
why do they lose motivation? What happens in the brain?
Well, when you eventually, as you're playing it, you get this dopamine buildup, and now your brain's used to that certain amount of dopamine. So when you stop playing it as much, it's the equivalent of having less dopamine, even though there's still a lot there. It's kind of like a diabetic. A diabetic can have a blood sugar of 300. They go on insulin for the first time. They'll have low blood sugar reactions and feelings at 240, which for the rest of us would be high blood sugar still, but it's a relative nature. It's Einstein's theory of relativity. It's all relative to what it's been in the last 24 hours, the last week, and the last few months as to how it feels to them. So when they stop gaming, then they start feeling all the low dopamine effects, even though it will be really high. And then eventually, as they get older, they'll just run out. But that'll go on for decades, a few decades usually. And so not only that, you have less, they become more sleepy, but they'll still do it. So they can't, it causes a sleep problem. And then acetylcholine also increases. And acetylcholine, when you stop it, when you stop playing, acetylcholine increases, which then that makes you more actually vibrant when it comes to memory. So your memory gets better. But one of the key things that it does is it increases your pain sensitivity. You become acutely aware of what's wrong with your body. It goes away when you start gaming again. Many people will recognize this. Like if they have a headache, they can go see a movie and the headache will go away while they're watching the movie. But then as soon as the movie stops, the headache returns. Well, that's acetylcholine for those people that have ever experienced that. You're looking at me confused like that's never happened to you. But
no, it's fascinating.
So that's the same scenario. Wow. So they literally stop gaming or stop social media and they become aware of all the problems in their body and life. And instead of dealing with them, they go back to gaming. So it sounds very similar to alcohol, doesn't it?
Wow,
it does. But it's an electronic version, but I call it aspartame because there's nothing to it. There's no substance. There's nothing you ingest. There's nothing your body takes, but it's causing all of these artificial hormones, and not artificial, they're actually our hormones, adrenaline, dopamine. It's messing with our brain chemistry without doing anything other than moving our thumbs, fingers, and that's it.
And you do that enough. You know, I've heard that the phrase nerves that fire together, wire together, and that 100%. Kind of a thing. You know, you're creating certain memories, muscle memories, and neurological reactions, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yep.
It's changing how your brain chemistry is working. You do that long enough, I would imagine you're doing some. So how do you actually help someone like that?
Well, first of all, you have to start supporting their system to be okay down-regulating the dopamine receptors. So you do have to treat it like a detox. So you have to slowly go off the game.
Wow.
You have to limit the hours. You don't go cold turkey for the most part because there will be withdrawal, just like sugar, alcohol, cocaine. There will be withdrawal from it for severe. We're talking about severe addicts here. And you can tell if you're severe, if what used to give you pleasure, you're now irritable. So if you're yelling, a lot of these kids, they tell me, you know, it used to be fun. Now I actually hate doing it, but I have to.
Wow.
And they find themselves yelling and screaming at the game itself and whoever they're playing. And so if that level of irritability has gotten that high, you're down that road.
So again, as we talked before the end of the first hour, it's like anytime we turn to a counterfeit comfort, you experience the law of diminishing returns. You know, you have this much and it helps me this much and then it takes more and you get less help. And pretty soon, you know, the scales tipped against you.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. We're going to take some calls. Frank is checking in from St. Paul. Hey, Frank, you're on the air. Good to have you today.
Thank you, Cindy.
Mm-hmm.
I've recently become aware of this folk remedy known as ECX-T, which, you know, some friends of mine have claimed that it has had incredible effects, even when, you know, shall we say there was negative expectations regarding its effectiveness for dealing with skin problems like cancer and yes, even diabetes. Is there any, shall we say, objective scientific evidence regarding its effectiveness?
I don't use that. I actually have not heard of it. So I would like to have you repeat that, actually, so that I can look into it, just so I have that. But I've not used that, or I'm not familiar with how you described it.
Do you want Frank back on so he can repeat it, or do you want to, we can go back and listen?
As long as someone can get it to me.
Okay, we'll get Frank's info to him. Okay, Denise is checking in from iSanti. Hey, Denise, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks, Susie. Thank you, Dr. Troy, for giving of your time this way. We so appreciate it. My husband and I are in our mid-40s and early 50s. We eat very clean, probably an eight or a nine on a scale of 10. We are wanting to begin a cleansing process just because we never have. We are planning the order of colon, then kidneys, then liver, if you agree with that. And secondly, overwhelmed with researching on do we buy a cleanse, do we do it yourself, what would you recommend?
Well, for me, I'm all about lifestyle. So I'm not necessarily a huge cleanse guy as far as like cleanses that we can do naturally. Now there's some caveats to that. So I'm really about trying to promote the most natural, subtle way to detoxify, which means have our body do it naturally as much as possible and just have that be generally a routine or a lifestyle. So what that means is for colon, I will like to find out what is the balance that's needed to keep that colon as healthy as possible and stay on. If you're an 8 out of 10 with diet and lifestyle already, then it doesn't take much just to add to the colon cleansing. So what that means is finding out if you're actually doing what needs to be done, though. So adding some extra fiber here and there. I prefer to do it subtly. Now, having said that, sometimes you have to do more. Now, a lot of these colon cleanses will have herbals in there, like Cascara Sagrada and other laxatives that will help just kind of purge. Now, doing that temporarily is okay, but I've seen people also get messed up by that. And so it's one of those things where it's hard for me to answer that, because I do actually help walk people through that, especially when they're stuck. If you don't feel stuck and you actually feel pretty good, then I'm not necessarily a huge fan of that, because that means you're doing things right, and I would rather just support that system. I like to do things kind of measured, so find out what's truly wrong. If the colon is not working 100%, then find out, if you can, try and get an idea of what part of it's wrong. So I'll give you an example. A lot of colon cleanses can be high fiber, and in inducing some a cleanse atmosphere, sometimes you're really getting some extra bile that's released from the gallbladder and liver. That can cause a lot of inflammation to the ileocecal valve, and then when fiber irritates, that thing spasms. And so some people can feel worse. Most people do feel better. About 80%, just rough estimate of my patients that have gone through cleanses, feel better. But it's something that I try and encourage people to keep doing things slow and naturally. The turtle wins this race always. But occasionally, if you feel stuck or you're really challenged, I will do cleanses when it comes to sugar cleanses to help people with sugar addiction. I will do colon cleanses, liver and gallbladder cleanses, to help them. But usually my cleanses are more along the lines of taking the nutritional support that the system needs to just function better versus other things that try and influence it, kind of like medications. A lot of the herbals that we use can cause a laxative effect and a cleansing effect, and they're okay temporarily, but we don't want to live on them. So it's a tough question to answer without having specifics about what's really wrong, but I encourage you, if you can, to try and stick to the slow and steady part of this so that you don't disrupt the good equilibrium you already have.
I love that, and it really speaks to balance and giving your body just a chance to adjust to a healthy lifestyle. That's awesome. Brian from Mendota Heights, Mary Little, Canada, we're going to get to you on the other side of the break. Clayton emailed a question: can your throat or tonsils become inflamed while doing a detox? So we'll answer that one on the other side. Email if you've got questions, Susie@myfaithradio.com, or call 877-933-2484. Maybe you heard me say this, you're not going to see this on the website, there'll be no radio spots. You're just going to hear it here. Next month, on August 24th, we have a live studio audience with Dr. Troy. We've got about 20 seats. If you want to join us, just email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Write live studio audience and give us your phone number, and 20 of you will receive a formal invitation from us. It'll be great fun. Don't go away. We'll be back in a minute.
It ain't over yet, ain't over yet. So move, keep walking. Soldier, keep moving on. Move, keep walking until the morning comes. Move, keep walking. Soldier, keep moving on and lift your head. It ain't over yet. Ain't
love that song. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Of The Promise. Every single month we get to have our friend Dr. Troy in studio. We call it Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. We answer your questions, and we're super excited. Next month, August 24th, we're having actually a live studio audience with Dr. Troy. We'll have some donors come in, but we've got 20 seats available for friends, listeners who want to come in and join and just be part of the live studio audience. We'll have some refreshments. The tickets are free, but here's how we're doing it. We want to have you email me if you want to be a part of the studio audience, and then 20 of you will receive an email or a call, kind of a formal invitation. So email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com, and just reference the live studio audience, and we need your phone number as well, okay? And call if you've got some questions now for Dr. Troy, 877-933-2484. We've got Brian checking in from Mendota Heights, and Mary from Little Canada, you're up next. Hey, Brian, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
We're great.
I've got probably two questions here. I've got a friend there that has some kidney stones in both kidneys, and there's some larger ones. how are they formed, and how can you get rid of them naturally without some surgery. And then for sleep patterns down there, if you're only sleeping about 3 or 4 hours at a time down there, how do you get a good night's sleep so you can kind of sleep straight through? What would you recommend?
Okay. Let me start with the sleep first, because for the many of you that may have heard me in the past, sleep is one of my big deals that I think is very much not addressed well in the healthcare world. And it's so crucial, because every night we need that for that restoration and rejuvenation. And nothing can help heal the body faster than getting a good deep sleep. So there's so many factors that go into it. And in fact, my next book is about that particular subject. And so I'll give the 30-second version of the 280 pages that that are coming. But the reality is, a lot of things can impact our sleep. From the topic tonight, let me lead with that one. When we talk about sugar addiction and alcohol addiction, both of those scenarios can impact our sleep. In the beginning, sugar taken during the day can actually help us sleep better at night when we're kids. It's the crash, basically. When we're adults, we switch to alcohol, and alcohol, people will use the alcohol to relax their brain so they can get to sleep at night. But then eventually we start to see that chemical problem that we talked about. And when you get to that point, sugar and alcohol late in the evening will cause a change in the ability to convert serotonin to melatonin. So not only do you get insulin resistance scenarios start to pop up, you also get a decrease in the conversion rate of our deep sleep hormone, melatonin. So an ice cream, a bowl of ice cream before bed, not good for sleep. Any type of excess sugar or sugar irregularities, not good for sleep. Now, we need water. And many, many times as we age, we lose the ability to get the water into our cells. So this is a process. But again, the more physically active you are, the more you're burning up your sugar, balancing it, and getting water to the muscles. So it's very important to drink lots of water. But the problem is, when we get deconditioned and we start to have problems, when you drink water, then all of a sudden you're up in the middle of the night going to the bathroom all the time. So if you drink lots of water after 4 p.m. and it makes you go to the bathroom more, it means you're not absorbing the water into the muscles and the areas of your body it needs to go. Your lymph system has become more like that lava stream we talked about earlier, and it's just bouncing off that and going right out through the kidneys and bladder. And so it becomes very, very important to start to exercise and drink your water during the day. Get as much water as you can during the day. Exercise as much as you can during the day. This will take months of consistency to start to improve where that water is going. So exercise by itself will help quite a bit with the sleep scenario. A lot of people will go to sleep aids and sleep meds because they can get an artificial sleep. It's not the same thing. You have to balance the blood sugar and the insulin and start to use your muscles. And then you need the water in the right place. Now, many, many people can't sleep more than 45 minutes or 4 hours at a time. A lot of times that comes from a hypoglycemic or low blood sugar response in the middle of the night. And so you get up and you have to move around. And so when the brain starts getting not enough sugar, it'll cause a sleep disorder. And so it takes months to redevelop this. Sometimes it's okay to take a low glycemic shake with extra fiber before going to bed. What this will do will help a little bit with that hypoglycemic response and get you a couple extra hours. So you have to retrain your system when it comes to the blood sugar and the water. And those are the two most important factors. There are other things that can also play into it. People who have dairy sensitivities or other sleep disorders like upper airway resistance will also not be able to sleep throughout the night. But by getting you from 3 hours to 4 hours to even 7 hours consistently is life-changing. And so start with the sugar and the physical activity in the water, and then move into more of the serotonin conversations later, as far as making sure stress is not a factor, or physically make sure you're breathing properly at nighttime and the nose isn't congested or the airway is not collapsing on you. So if there's a snoring issue, you got to fix that. That's generally a problem. If there's weight loss that needs to be had or done, then that also has to be addressed. So all those factors will play into it. And there's many, many more, but that was way more than 30 seconds on that one.
My goodness, it's so fascinating. So, you know, we've talked about this before where there are times where the blood sugar drops. And so would you say there's a time and a place for some to have protein, as long as it's not a high sugar protein, like a pure protein, something, a few bites of some kind of protein before they go to bed to keep their blood sugar level?
Yeah, definitely. So we'll do a low glycemic snack, and protein sometimes are really good options. Little chicken nugget chunks without the breading.
Mm-hmm.
And then low glycemic shakes with fiber that you know you can tolerate are good too, because they'll help give just a little bit extra sustained release. And so those are okay. And even sometimes we'll have certain individuals have an apple, something that's got fiber attached to it, a whole fruit, if you will, that doesn't have a huge glycemic index. You can't do all the fruits before bed, but an apple sometimes you can do as well.
Wow. So Mary from Little Canada, we have a hard break coming up in about a minute and a half, and I want you to be able to have time to give Dr. Troy your question. Let me just throw, did you have more to say?
Well, I want to answer a second question about
please,
the kidney stones too.
Yeah. The
kidney stones naturally, they're much easier to prevent than they are to get rid of. Unfortunately, they need to pass. I've got some colleagues who do well with that, they say, but I've not seen the results myself enough to pass that along as far as take this to the bank, this is what you can do. But generally speaking, you can decrease your stones, again, if you're drinking plenty of water and keeping the kidneys healthy, which means balancing the electrolytes as much as possible. There are a couple different stones, and whenever I see any type of stone, whether it be a gallstone or a kidney stone, generally speaking, there's a problem with an inflammation or alkalinity or acidity in the body that has to be addressed, an underlying problem. So if you can keep your acid-alkaline balance there, and you can keep your inflammation under control, that really does reduce a lot of the potential for kidney stones.
When we come back, I want to talk about the alkaline balance and the pH balance and just that whole idea. But guess what? One of the emails that came in was from the Synapse team, and they said, we just want to say hi to Dr. Troy, let him know we're listening and that he's doing great. Your team is cheering you on.
Yay, team.
Yeah, and they're like, hey, will you pick up a loaf of bread on the way? No, they didn't really say that. Hey, if you want to be part of the live studio audience next month, we're super excited. Email us. 20 of you will get seats. It's free. Email to be in on the drawing. Susie at myfaithradio.com. And don't forget your phone number, and you'll receive a formal invitation coming up very soon. So excited about it. Back in a minute. Another great song. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Of the Promise. We're so blessed and honored to have Dr. Troy in studio with us. He joins us every month for both hours of the show. What generosity to really sow into your health. And the thing is, God wants to partner with us, and it requires our cooperation. Well, I'm super excited that, and again, you're not going to see this on the website. You're not going to hear any spots on the radio. You're only going to hear this here. But next month, Thursday, August 24th, we've got a live studio audience with Dr. Troy, and a number of the seats are already taken, but we got about 20 seats available. And so if you want in on the drawing to come to the live studio audience, we'll have refreshments, just a fun time, and you'll get to ask questions from the live studio audience. Email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com, and reference the live studio audience, and then we need your phone number. If you've got calls, health questions, now's the time to call. 877-933-2484. Mary from Little Canada deserves some kind of award, Dr. Troy, because that girl's been on hold for some time now. Mary, thanks for holding. You're on the air with Dr. Troy.
Hi, thanks, Susie, for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Say, recently, I became aware that my 10-year-old grandson, who, you know, I always knew he was smart, but I found out that he's actually a genius. And I know I should be excited about that, but actually I'm not really very excited about that, just because of things I don't know. It's just the idea of that whole thing. But my question is this. He has been given access to build computer programs for Apple and other places. They're mostly for practice right now. He's winning awards and things like that. So he's on his computer a lot with, you know, he wants to be an architect and an engineer and things like that. And then he also does his games. So I'm wondering if those two, if they equally affect the dopamine in his brain and what is that going to do? And then also he has ADHD on top of that, which I'm going to be prayerfully addressing with the parents, hopefully at some point. But I, all this combined concerns me, I guess. You know, he's just a fun-loving kid still, as far as, you know, when he's when he plays balloons with grandma. But does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. It's an interesting scenario, and it's a conversation I just had recently in last month when I believe I was in Chicago lecturing, and we got into a conversation around this topic. And there's a couple things here. Nothing really changes. Human nature is human nature. So when Susan and I are talking about balance, it's still very much part of the relevant conversation. And the reality here, though, is if he's got a gift, and his gift is that he falls into that genius category, there's going to be a lot he can do with that gift. So your job, your role is still to love him and encourage him, and just know that that he has this gift that's been given to him from God. But there are some things watch for, because I would say I have a friend or colleague who's in the same position, and it was very interesting talking to him, because he doesn't forget much of anything, and he is a Christian, and he said he many times wishes he wasn't as smart as he was, because it's held him back from knowing God, because he fights his intellectualism all the time when it comes to his relationship with God. So just maybe I'll pass that along, just because a lot of times when you are smarter or faster, can outthink everyone around you, it really becomes about you. And unfortunately, a lot of us need to be humbled or need to have certain things happen in our life where we feel less than to get to know God, to know that we know him. So it's important to just do what you can to continually bring God to him so that he knows God. If he knows God and can apply his genius, then that's when things will work out better in my mind. When it comes to the ADHD, that's very common for anyone who might think at a higher level, extra level. And genius is kind of a relative term, because many people are more of a genius musically, and some are genius when it comes to emotional IQ. They see and can read people, and they can tell what's going on with them emotionally without a word being spoken. So there are many forms of it, and so just think of it like a gift, and nothing changes. You still want to bring him to God, and when it comes to the actual brain side of it, he maybe will just handle more of the computer stuff. So the computer conversation we had earlier still applies to him, but he may be able to last longer and go longer before the same thing starts to happen. Einstein was considered a genius too, and he went through quite a life, and he's an individual I actually studied, because I wanted to understand a little bit more about who he was. And he was a genius when it came to math, but he used his right side of his brain to really get creative with math. And so his genius was not in the analytical math world. It was actually in the creative world, the same as what we see with a lot of artists. But he also had a pain syndrome. He also had a horrific womanizing problem. And he basically was very gifted at speaking to people, and which was not normal for a mathematical genius, as far as being able to relate to people that way. And people just loved him, and that's why he was kind of adored too. But he was heavily influenced by the surroundings that he was in. So he came up with a theory of relativity when he was alone after being kicked out of school and was in a patent office. Once he got into the academic world, he never came up with another theory that proved to be true, like he did with the theory of relativity, his main one. And he even said he was too influenced by the people he thought were intelligent around him. And so he got out of his genius, if you will. And he had a lot to say about God towards the end of his life, after he had been through a lot. And so His life was very, very interesting to me because he's one person we think of when we think of the word genius. And so I have read about his life, and there's a lot we can glean from that. So nothing changes because he's a genius. They're exactly the same. In fact, it's very important that everything still stays true. A child genius still needs boundaries. A child genius still needs consequences. A child genius still needs to be loved. It just, things seem a little bit more out of balance. And I guarantee you, if you keep being his grandma and bringing him a source of love for him, he will resonate with that, and he will love you for that. And eventually he'll know where to turn to when he does get in trouble.
Boy, that is fantastic. So interesting. I love these questions. Okay, Barb also deserves an award because she's been on hold a little bit, checking in from Plymouth. Barb, first of all, thank you so much for holding, and you are now on the air with Dr. Troy.
You're welcome. Thank you for taking my call. My question for the doctor is, my husband and I, since January, have been taking a daily dose of diatomaceous earth, and just want your opinion or your thoughts on that.
Well, there's actually a lot of benefit to it. I'm trying to think of the gentleman, Dr. Rubin, who spoke a lot about that, and it helped with a lot of his problems. I don't personally use that, but it's only because it's not entered my repertoire of products. But I've heard good things, and we know there's a lot to the actual mechanisms now, and as far as how it affects our biome and our good and bad bacteria, and there's a lot of good evidence. We don't know everything. We haven't measured things as far as the science of it, but we are starting to see good benefits. So without knowing too much more about how it might affect you, we do know that it has great potential, but it has to be managed like everything else as far as balance. So think of it as an ecosystem in there, and this is one thing that can help bring balance, but there's many other factors that also have to go into it. But I've not heard anything bad per se, and have generally heard good.
Thanks so much for that. Okay, Mary emails and says, this is really an interesting question. She says, does the body get quote-unquote lazy when you take a medication that boosts a bodily process, resulting in the body relying too much on the medication? I've heard that sometimes even taking too many supplements can understress the body. And for anyone that's been on medication a long period of time, can the liver ever get worn out from having to filter and detox that medication? And what are some signs maybe this has happened? Fascinating questions right there. What do you say?
Your listeners are so smart.
I know.
Keeping me on my toes.
Exactly.
I would say that there's the potential for that, for the liver system, for medications. Not all medications will do that, but there's highly potential. Same thing for supplements, for some of them. Not as much. So supplements generally are not as strong as medications, and supplements are meant to supplement a healthy lifestyle. So we can get away with it a little bit more with supplements. But it's important to have the healthy lifestyle. So it supplements generally won't do it as much, but it still is very, very important to recognize that supplements, it should be taken in conjunction with a healthy lifestyle. Now, the liver itself is the fastest regenerating organ. So many, many times, if there's damage, it can actually heal faster than any other organ in our body. So it can come back from many, many things. And in fact, we can lose part of our liver and it'll still function. So the liver is just extraordinary as far as how much it can handle and take. And that's why a lot of people will say in the traditional world, you know, don't worry about the side effects because of how rejuvenating the liver system will be. And so if you're not having any massive side effects, the liver just keeps on ticking, so to speak. So many times you get that liver function back fully. Was there any other part to that question?
So,
that I missed,
you know,
there?
The body getting kind of lazy from relying on meds and.
Yeah, definitively. If that's happening, we may not be using our natural processes again. And so things, receptors and nervous signals are all down regulated or up regulated depending on how often we're using them. So if the medication helps to use the current system that's there, then it actually upregulates it and can help. If the medication is something that takes over the function for it, then it can actually down-regulate that system, and that's what she's talking about there. And so that's what we have to kind of guard against. Some of the signs and symptoms that this is happening is if you are starting to lose other function. So if it's harder to, and you'll know them as side effects. So generally speaking, the thing I love about medications is that many of them have been tested, and we have a full list of this is the expected side effects. I wish we had that more in the natural world, mm-hmm. With the herbals and the products. And we're seeing more studies done, but it's not quite as black and white. And so look at the side effect list. That will be your indicator or clue that it's starting to downregulate something, because certain people, when they first do the studies, are already further down that path. So they have the symptoms pretty quickly in the time that the study allows for it. Other people that are a little bit more healthy in that particular area, it may take 6 months or a year later before they start to have the side effects of the medications.
You know, here's another example of maybe interrupting the systems. And in the interest of full disclosure, I still take a little bit of Benadryl at night, and I have my organic coffee in the morning, but it's like only 30 milligrams, one coffee cup, right? I'm looking to you. Is this okay?
She's looking at me asking for approval through her eyes.
Really, come on, let it be okay. But the truth of the matter is, and so I'm just saying that because I don't want to sound like I'm being judgmental, but people are doing these mega monster things in the morning and then strong sleep things at night. And that's an example of totally interrupting bodily process in a way that you're getting, like you said, artificial sleep, artificial energy, and you're missing out on the best maybe of what God would have for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's one of those things where if that becomes your lifestyle, then you're slowly going to train your body to need that to get the lesser sleep, and it slowly gets worse and worse and worse. Mm. It's kind of the American way right now.
Yeah.
So we're trying to reverse that and try and bring us back to more of the natural innate state that God put us in and how he made us to have things work better.
So if a person is kind of amped up on their high caffeine in the morning and maybe even throughout the day, and then they take the meds at night to get off of that, would that be a slow decrease on both of those? Is that kind of hot?
So you slow decrease on both and applying different things throughout the day, because as you do that, you're going to start to see the natural process take over, and there's going to be that afternoon lull. And that's one of the first things we start to see, is that you start to get tired mid-afternoon. And so we start to see the patterns of fatigue, waking up a little more tired in the morning, jumping up a little bit, and then crashing again mid-afternoon, mm-hmm. and then getting another wind, if you will. And so getting that more balanced out, instead of during that crashing, you can either take a nap, which is actually okay and helpful, or you can go for a workout or just do 10 minutes of exercise to start to change that behavior as far as how the brain's communicating with the body. And you'll be shocked at it takes some time, but you'll get that back.
That's amazing. We're going to pause here for our last break. I see you, Joan from Shoreview. Wendy from New Brighton will take your calls on the other side. And remember, if you want to be part of the live studio audience next month, I'm so excited. We'll have some refreshments. We've got about 20 seats available for you, our dear listeners. But don't go looking on our website for it, because we just thought we'll just have to mention it this one time and it will probably fill up those 20 spots. So this is how you do it. Email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com, and reference the live studio audience. It's next month, Thursday, August 24th. Reference the live studio audience, give us your phone number, and 20 of you will receive an invitation either by phone or email. I'm super excited about that. And if you got questions, keep those coming as well. We'll be back in a minute. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is The Promise. Honored to have our good friend Dr. Troy in studio. Boy, where has the time gone? This thing has flown. Want you to know that next month, Thursday, August 24th, we will have Dr. Troy in for a live studio audience, and we've got most of the seats filled up, but we've got 20 for you, our dear listeners. So if you want to be part of the live studio audience, this is how you do it. You email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com, and reference live studio audience and leave us your phone number, and 20 of you will receive an invitation either by phone or email from our listener engagement director, and we are going to have a great time. So Joan is holding, waiting to talk to Dr. Troy. Joan, thanks, first of all, for your patience, and you're on the air now with Dr. Troy.
Hi, Dr. Troy. I had my cholesterol checked 2 years ago, and it was 187, and that kind of frightens me because prior to that it had been like 120 to 160. So I had a physical just recently, and my results are 257, which just about caused me to have a heart attack all by itself. My doctor wrote a note saying it's a little high, but not to worry, we'll recheck it next year. So my question is, how can this happen when I believe my diet over these years has improved? I actually do a really low-carb diet because I just don't want wheat or any of that stuff. I eat a lot of fruits, a lot of vegetables, and I probably only eat red meat like once a week. I eat chicken and fish.
Okay, so you said cholesterol. Those are your cholesterol numbers?
Yeah.
Okay, I missed that first part. Okay, so your total cholesterol was 120, then it went up to 187, and then 257?
Yeah.
Okay, so number one, if that's your total cholesterol, 120 is actually pretty low. So that's not necessarily...
But that was way. That was a long time
okay.
ago.
Okay, so the most important thing with cholesterol is the ratio. So you want to make sure the ratio is okay. So a lot of times when you start consuming healthy fats, olive oil... other oils or healthier fats that are in avocados, then you start to see an increase with the total cholesterol. But if the ratio is fine, if your HDLs, that's the good cholesterol, if that ratio between total cholesterol and HDL is still under 4, you're doing fine. So under 3.5 is great. So if you're 257 with your total cholesterol and you've got 100 for your HDLs or 80 for your HDLs, you're fine. You've got a lot of cardio protection. So the people around, just in the different countries here, a lot of people in Greece have cholesterols in the 300s, but their ratios are so good because they have a high Mediterranean diet, which basically increases their cholesterol, but their heart disease is so low. It's because they've got the good cholesterol. Now, let's just say, without having that number, let's just say the good cholesterol is not necessarily that good, and you're asking, why would my cholesterol go up when diet's fine? So diet and lifestyle are what can increase that. There's some genetic components, but not if you start at 120. So you don't have the genetic hereditary component to this. So what that means is, what else could have impacted that? So diet seems pretty good. So let's assume diet's fine. So then let's define lifestyle. Lifestyle could mean stress. So stress can increase it. Stress is actually the number one cause that increases it. So any type of extra stressful events in life can spike your cholesterol because stress will increase free radicals. Free radicals cause damage to blood vessel walls and to different cells, and we need cholesterol. Cholesterol is kind of the patch that goes in there. So that damage will trigger these foam cells, part of our immune system, to send a signal saying, I need more cholesterol. So any type of stress can do it. Mental stress, chemical stress, like a toxic exposure. So if you started taking a new medication, a hormone for hormone replacement therapy, that can trigger cholesterol. If you started any type of change, even if you're premenopausal and there's a change in your hormones, that can oftentimes trigger it as well. So you've got to look at what else set up a mental and chemical stressor. Were you exposed to anything in particular? Dismiss anything like fungal infections coming from your filter in your house, your water filter. Because a lot of people will be doing everything right and then start to see changes like this and say, what's going on? And then when we investigate a little bit, we find out, oh, you haven't changed the filter in 6 months or a year, and you've got some yeast or fungal components going on, or you've developed a fungal infection or yeast infection because you had to go on antibiotics 6 months ago. There are many, many other factors. So if the HDL is not okay and cholesterol is going up, it'll be something other than diet itself in the lifestyle conversation that's causing the imbalance. We've even seen physical injury cause cholesterol to spike at times. Wow. So it's important to know that mental, chemical, and physical cellular damage or irritation or irritability can cause a cholesterol spike.
Wow, so interesting. One more call because it's almost time to wrap here. Wendy, you're checking in from New Brighton. We literally have about, I'd say, 4 minutes total for the question to get asked and to get answered. So, Wendy, you're on the air with Dr. Troy.
Hi, Dr. Troy.
Hello.
What's your question?
So my question is, it's in regards to my husband. He was diagnosed in 2009 with polycystic kidney disease. Essentially, there are not very many symptoms to this disease, and since then, his kidney has doubled in size.
Wow.
So aside from healthy lifestyle that they recommended. Do you have any other advice on how to manage this disease?
Well, yeah, it's a tough one. And so lifestyle is crucial, but again, we have to define that to his uniqueness. So when it comes to this type of thing, we want to look at what is he good at doing. I'm going to give you a couple hints here that we usually see with this disorder, but you need the lab work to back this up and confirm it. A lot of times we start to see a decrease in the ability to remove certain chemicals and toxins from his environment. So the cysts form for a reason. We don't know what that is specifically yet, but I will say there are some common threads that we see in this scenario with this particular disorder. A lot of times we're going to need, or he's going to need, N-acetylcysteine. NAC is another one, another way of saying it. Alpha-lipoic acid, and these are buffers that help with removal of heavy metals and other agents when it comes to the heavy metal conversation, but they help the buffer the kidney response. It's also important to see, is he methylating properly? Now, methylation is a form, one of the ways that supports our detoxification system. Almost always, it's from decreased B12 or folic acid, and we need, certain people have a genetic predisposition to this, so getting tested for the genetic methylation is very, very important as well. Many times they'll need methylated folic acid and B12. There are certain supplements out there. One's called Renagen, which is a way of saying kidney support, that is from the company Metagenics. And it really has NAC, it has alpha-lipoic acid, it has the methylated forms of the B vitamins. And so if there's a genetic scenario, and that is part of his uniqueness, then you want to support that system. Some people have to go right to B12 injections. Some people can take a supplement. It's also important, if he does have methylation problems, is there a stomach acid imbalance? Because an imbalanced stomach acid can also set up a scenario that will affect the kidneys greatly. And when it comes to the absorption, is he absorbing and the B vitamins and the calcium properly through the stomach system? Is there the normal bacteria in the digestive tract, which helps with the other B vitamins that will support the kidney function? Of pulling out food allergies and reducing any type of excess inflammation is important. So that means eliminate food allergies, pull out sugar, excessive sugar, I should say. And that's part of what lifestyle means. And what you're doing is you're setting his system up as best you can for it to start to heal naturally. There are a few other scenarios that would have to be looked at. One other way to find out if he's got methylation issues is just to check his blood homocysteine levels. And if it's below 6.5, that's great. That's where we want to see it. If it's above 6.5, then we need to work on that those methylators as well. So there's a lot of factors there, but the lifestyle factors really, really can be mental, chemical, and physical. And I will say there is fears associated with kidney dysfunction in general, very general. So finding out if there's an emotional component to it is important. There may or may not be.
Fear. Wow, look at that one. This time went by so fast. If you're interested in joining us for the live studio audience next month, email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Remember that phone number as well. You've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. In a bit, you'll find a podcast of today's program on our website, and we will meet you back here next time.